Discerning Hearts provides content dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. To continue production of these videos, prayers, and more, go to discerninghearts.com and click the donate link found there or inside the free Discerning Hearts app to make your donation. Thanks, and God bless.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Bruce McGregor. She is
Chris McGregor.
That makes us the McGregors. And today we're joined by another Mick, a McCarran, Patricia McCarran, Associate Professor of French at Drury University in Missouri. Longtime devotee, as she says, of St. Bernadette, has a book out on, it's called A Holy Life, St. Bernadette of Lourdes. And Patricia, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning and thank you so much for having me.
Patricia, I have to thank you from the bottom of my heart for putting out this book, A Holy Life, The Writings of St. Bernadette of Lourdes, because I've always loved Bernadette, but I didn't know her. I thought I did, but I didn't until I had your book, and now I'm carrying it everywhere. I'm reading it every chance I get. I go back, I thumb through it. This was a remarkable soul.
She really was, and you really warmed my heart with that. With your words there, she really was a remarkable soul, very special woman. And we've never seen her as she really was. We always see her interpreted or filtered through, you know, a movie or a book about her, a novel. And those are always interpretations. And what astonished me was to find out just how much more interesting and inspiring and moving she is in her own words.
Right. Is that really what sparked your interest in this book about St. Bernadette?
That's kind of a complicated question. I discovered the Song of Bernadette, that movie, when I was in my early 20s, and it was the first time I'd ever even, I'm a convert, and I wasn't really raised in any religion, and it was the first time I had ever even heard of the Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
So there was something authentic in that movie, in spite of how kind of sentimentalized it was, and it just stayed with me. And I read everything about her that I could, and then when I discovered that she had written letters and that she had a private spiritual notebook, I had no decision. I had to translate it. I just felt compelled to do so. And it was a joy.
You know, that's the thing. I think my images of Bernadette as a young child growing up was the portrayal by Jennifer Jones, which was beautiful.
It was.
I mean, it was a real homage to her and to just to the story. It's a beautiful telling in a way that you really don't get stories out of Hollywood like that anymore. But it didn't, at the end of the story, when she went off to the convent, a lot of people, you got the impression that she was completely isolated, that she was miserable, maybe, because she was suffering, but also because of her separation from her family. But you've really broken it open where she really wasn't as isolated as we perceived.
No, she was very devoted to her vocation. She had many close friends at the convent. She was beloved at the convent, and she had a very full life. She did suffer enormously. She had cholera when she was a little girl, about 11. Before that and ever after that, she had asthma, and the cholera made the asthma even worse. She did have tuberculosis of the bones and the lungs, and she was sick. She was a very sick young woman and a very high-spirited woman.
Mm-hmm.
So she suffered, but she brought meaning to that suffering by offering it up to God. But she was not isolated in that way. She did miss her family enormously, and travel was difficult in the 19th century.
Sure.
There were constant letters back and forth to her family members.
I just have this image. I guess I didn't appreciate that she was so tiny, too.
I know. Well, I think after the cholera, she never grew again. And I don't know if your listeners know this, but she is incorrupt. They exhumed her body in 1909 and discovered her just flawless. She's beautiful.
Yep.
And when I saw her for the first time at the convent where she lived and then finally passed away, I was just stunned by how beautiful she was and also how tiny she was. And at first, you know, it seemed kind of sweet. She was so little. And then when I found out that it was as a result of her disease, it kind of made me look at that a little bit differently.
For our Protestant brothers and sisters who may not know the story, part of that, when you just mentioned it was her being incorrupt, is that she was buried actually in a coffin in the ground for over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when they exhumed her, when they began the canonization process, which is a normal thing when they can do that, they'll check to make sure that person is buried at that site, that they did find her. She hadn't decayed.
No, not only that, her habit was damp. Her rosary had rusted through, and she was in perfect condition. She is more beautiful now than most of us have ever been in our lives.
That's right. And you can go to France and see this and to visit the body of Saint Bernadette. And it's not as though they have a special container. I mean, it's glass, but it's not like it's a vacuum type of enclosure.
No, absolutely not.
It's a natural container. And in that in itself seems quite miraculous, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
But what's really miraculous is the life of this soul, of this woman, who is Saint Bernadette. And because the legacy that she left was not just this image, but also of her witness. And I think that's what's so important.
Well, you know, I was initially attracted to the story because of the miraculous apparitions, because of the miracles, the healings that happened as a result of those apparitions. It's fascinating. But I have to say that spending day after day translating her, and when you translate someone, you get very close to her, because I was trying so hard to be faithful to represent her just as she really was and to keep myself out of it. And so to get so close to her and see that really the life that she led after the apparition, what she did with the great grace she had been given, was so impressive and moving. She felt an enormous sense of responsibility to live a worthy life, and she felt totally unworthy of the grace she'd been given. Mm-hmm. But she took her vocation so seriously. She was so humble, so courageous, and just valiant, and she intentionally sought holiness. And for me, that was in many ways more moving. Once I got past the apparitions, for me personally, it was so much more moving, because she's an example, a role model for all of us, that we're all called to holiness.
She lived several decades before Thérèse the Little Flower, and yet she often would say, "I will not forget anyone."
Yeah.
She promised to pray for someone, but she was very humble, and she felt that her prayers were very weak.
She says that repeatedly.
Isn't that something?
It really is, because most of us would think if we'd been given that great grace that our prayers would not be so weak, but she genuinely did feel that. And on everything anyone would ask her to sign, she always signed it, "Pray for Bernadette."
Yes, because she always felt so unworthy.
She did. It wasn't an artificial sense of unworthiness. It was a genuine, deep sense of unworthiness and humility. And you see that especially in her little spiritual notebook, which is, to me, just a jewel. Bernadette's often considered or called the most secret of saints. And it's because she really did not want the attention that came to her through these apparitions. And when you read her little spiritual notebook, so many of the things that she wrote about were just this attempt to cultivate humility. She saw that as the most important virtue. She says, after all the other virtues are left aside, humility, it will be the last, most shining one that human beings should seek.
Amen to that. We're visiting today with Patricia McGarren, author of a wonderful, wonderful book on the writings of St. Bernadette of Lourdes. It's called A Holy Life.
We were talking off mic, and Bruce was joking about how I haven't been able to put the book down. And
it's true.
It's true. Well, I haven't. And there are times where I smile so hard. And then there are other times where like the other night, tears were coming down, because I'd never appreciated in her suffering towards the end of her life how not only we know that she had tuberculosis, correct?
Right.
But she also suffered in a way because she was so worried for her brother Pierre and what would happen to him. Just the letters that you were able to translate.
She just was so devoted to her two brothers and sister, and she was the oldest of the family. And when both of the parents died, she just, even at the distance, because Nevers, the city where the convent was a distance from Lourdes. Difficult to travel in that time period, but she considered herself the head of the family, and she prayed constantly for Pierre to find the right vocation, and for her brother Jean. She prayed for the entire family, but Pierre was the youngest, and there were some incidences where she'd be told something had happened that hadn't quite happened, and she would write to the priests in Lourdes and, please tell me the truth. If Pierre did this, I want to know. And it was something he hadn't done, and it was kind of blown out of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
But she would give advice, and to her little goddaughter, she'd write letters of advice. And she is so human. She's so vividly present in her letters. And you see her in all of her humanity.
You do. And the struggle that she had been separated from her family, but as they suffered, as her sister, Marie, would have miscarriage or the death of a child.
Over and over and over.
And she took those to heart, and she took those to prayer.
She did. She took everything to prayer. She took everything to prayer. And she wrote letters that trying to console her sister. And her letters are really so filled with just a faith that is just interwoven into everything she thinks, every reaction she has. She has a faith reaction to every experience in her life, and she tries so hard to share that with her brother and sister and other loved ones.
I found very compelling, too, the letter that she wrote to the Pope, to the Holy Father,
mm-hmm.
asking for an apostolic blessing.
Right.
That's priceless. I've never seen that before.
She didn't feel worthy to write that letter. He wrote, he wanted his apostolic blessing, as anyone would, but her bishop asked her to write that letter, and she was just overcome with this feeling of unworthiness. Can I, a little sister, write to His Holiness? And then she says, but then I remembered that you're like a father to us. You are a father to us. And so in this kind of context, she wrote the letter, and it's a beautiful letter, and she talks about her weapons are prayer, and that as long as she is on earth, she can use this in prayer as a weapon in the sense of fighting whatever obstacles we have in this life, spiritual obstacles. And it is a beautiful letter. That the one that's in the book is actually the fourth draft. There were three drafts before that.
I think I'd probably do a few drafts before I sent one.
We didn't cut and paste back in those days.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, you'd probably be agonizing over it for weeks.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Another sister who was so weak at that time, she was so ill, but another sister had to write the little writing desk. She was in bed writing the letter, and somebody else had to hold the little writing desk while she was writing the letter.
You even have in here a letter that was written by a doctor, because there was a time, even while Bernadette was alive, that people started having, they always had misgivings about what was happening at Lourdes. But even many years later, there was still this, she made this up, this is a hallucination,
mm-hmm.
and she had to be examined. And you have letters from a doctor who examined her, said she's rather sickly looking, 27-year-old woman, but... And she's calm and gentle nature, and she cares for her patients and with a great deal of intelligence.
Exactly. This doctor was her doctor when she was a patient, and she was a nurse's aide in the infirmary. So when she wasn't a patient herself, she was serving the other sisters who were in the infirmary. And she performed her duties meticulously, efficiently, kindly. She was an excellent nurse. And she's really a woman of common sense. She's just a down-to-earth, sensible woman. And so the doctor writes this letter and to refute these accusations that she was hysterical and hallucinating. And he came to the conclusion, after knowing her for years, he worked with her for many years, that there would be no opportunity for this type of woman to be given to hallucination.
Right.
The one thing that comes through very clear, a lot of times when we think of Saint Bernadette, we think of that 14-year-old girl.
Exactly. We kind of stop in time there, don't we?
Mm-hmm. We do. And what you've done is you realize that who was canonized was this whole person.
Exactly. And I think that really the cause for canonization was originally opened because of her role model for holiness. It wasn't simply because she had the apparitions of the Virgin Mary. I mean, she was given an incredible grace, and she handled it so beautifully. What really impresses me, too, is just how scrupulously honest she was. She was
mm-hmm.
interrogated repeatedly by ecclesial authorities, by civil authorities. She was taken down to the jail. I mean, she was repeatedly interrogated.
Mm-hmm.
And she never changed her story. She didn't always say every detail that had happened, but she always remained consistent in the story that she told. So we kind of stopped there, you know, when at the apparitions, which is, it is, it's just a beautiful story. It is wonderful. And there are still healings to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There are spiritual and physical healings that happen at Lourdes. But to me, just the completion of her life and how she felt the sense of responsibility to live up to that grace is such an inspiration for us. And I think these days we need some solid role models for holiness, because we're all called to holiness.
And the fact that a lot of times we have images, because I think maybe because of the movie,
mm-hmm.
that she never learned how to read. She never knew how to write. I mean,
yeah.
But she really grew in her education as she got older.
I was stunned to find out that she could write. Actually, when she was visited by the Virgin Mary, she only spoke patois, which is kind of a mix between Spanish and French. She didn't even speak standard French. And then the sisters with whom she eventually joined taught her to read and write and to speak French. So when I discovered that she had written letters and had a spiritual notebook, I was really stunned, because I had been devoted to her for years. In fact, she's really in large part responsible for my conversion, at least opening that door. She's the only name I considered when I was being confirmed. So, but it was really a surprise to me to discover that she was a very smart woman. She didn't have the benefit of a very high education, but what she did have, she used very well.
One of my favorite, well, there's so many of them, but one of my favorite points in the book is where the Prussians are coming in. And you want to tell that story and how?
You go ahead.
Well, they talk, the enemy is close. And so she wrote, I could easily forego seeing the Prussians, but I am not afraid of them. God is everywhere, even in the middle of the Prussians.
Exactly.
I remember when I was little, after one of, is it Father, help me with the pronunciation again. Paramel?
Paramal. Mm-hmm.
Paramala.
You did find them.
Thank you. After one of Father Paramal's sermons, I heard some people saying, bah, he's only doing his job. It seems to me that the Prussians are only doing their job, too.
She's so matter of fact. And see the faith that it would take, that you would have to, I mean, to face, because they were in danger. There were encampments. I mean, the French soldiers used the convent as a hospital, and they had cannons set up. They were in great danger. The sisters had their trunks packed and ready to evacuate. It didn't come to that. But I mean, this was serious danger right on their front steps. And her faith was so great that you see the response in that letter. You have to have an enormous amount of faith to be faced with that kind of a scenario and react that way.
Yeah, it'd be so cool.
Exactly. Yeah.
The private notes, which is actually the first part of the book,
mm-hmm.
I found that that's a perfect for anybody. I mean, those are spiritual tips that everybody could use every day.
Absolutely. And you can meditate on any one of those just as a complete meditation for a day, for a week, for a year. She compiled notes from writers, saints, great spiritual leaders, that were really important to her. So all of those spiritual notes are not original, but they are all quotations that meant a great deal to her. And some of them are original to her. But they are so deep. And I found that, I think, probably a greater entree into her own private spiritual life than anything else.
Yeah, I would say that just to get the book, A Holy Life, just for that section, it's like looking at the playbook for a saint. You know, it's like a saint's playbook.
That's a great way to put it, Chris.
Well, we're from Nebraska and Cornhuskers.
Football.
But it is. It is. It's even if they're not all original to her, it's what helped form her to be the person that she is. And what a remarkable person.
I know. Well, you know, I have some of these quotations. I have just printed and hidden in places around my house. So when I go into a closet, there's that quotation to remind me, because I find them just so uplifting and such a great goal to seek.
You have helped to bring that forward to us, to this, you know, the life of this remarkable young girl who was able to say, but she told me her name is I Am the Immaculate Conception, to have the courage to be able to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, Patricia, we're both a little jealous here looking over your bio information and stuff. You spent some time in France in the late 90s.
Well, I actually spent quite a bit of time in France.
You have? Well, lucky you. And then, of course, well, but perhaps the late 90s, that's when you were drawn to visit Lourdes?
Well, you know, I had always wanted to go to Lourdes, but I've been in France many times, and just because of my professional necessity. And it was just so far out of the way that I never was able to go. And then this one year in 1997, I was going to be in the south of France doing a business French seminar. I thought, well, I'm going over to Lourdes that weekend. And I went, and it was so moving. And quite frankly, I wasn't Catholic at that point. When I came back, I started the RCIA process.
Wow.
Never looked back. But I wasn't Catholic at that point. I was just drawn. I was just drawn there. And that's why I was saying I think there are spiritual healings. It's not just physical healings that happen in Lourdes. And the first time I was at the grotto, I had arrived late, and it was kind of cold and rainy. And I was the only person at the grotto. That doesn't happen very often.
I was going to say, that's quite a grace-filled moment.
It was. It was. And it was just such an important place for me to pray and to meditate about the meaning of the Lord, which is conversion and penance. And it was very moving for me. But when I went back and was with my other colleagues for about a week, they kept teasing me, that where'd you go this weekend, Patricia? I said, I went to Lourdes. And it was, after that, it was Saint Patricia this, and it was difficult.
Well, I think you were being given the grace to start a very important project.
Yeah,
I think so too. I didn't realize it at the time, but I can tell you, Chris, it was a joy to work on this book.
It would be fitting for Our Lady to want to lift up her faithful servant in such a special way.
I think so.
Indeed.
Too.
Patricia, in going through this process and compiling this book and everything, is there anything you learned about Bernadette that might surprise any of us?
Well, I think some of that we've already talked about, the amount of suffering that she went through and how she responded to it so beautifully, that surprised me. The depth of her faith surprised me. The fact that she was incorrupt, I had no idea about that. That surprised me. One thing that really moved me too, and for me as a French professor, just was very meaningful. When Bernadette was speaking to Our Lady was the first person in Bernadette's life to ever address her with the formal form of you. In French, there's an informal and there's a formal form. And Bernadette was a peasant. She was poverty stricken. She was ill. They had been reduced. Her family had been reduced to living in a former prison cell, a family of six that had been condemned as too unhealthy for prisoners. And here was a young woman who had a 14-year-old girl who had asthma and had, you know, was still recovering from the effects of cholera.
Right.
And Our Lady addressed her as vous, which is very respectful. And no one had ever addressed her like that before. For me, that was. It was also kind of a confirmation that it was indeed Our Lady.
Absolutely.
Well, you've got me crying again, Patricia.
leave it to our mother.
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, Patricia, we want to thank you so much for spending time with us, but not only that, but for compiling this book, A Holy Life, The Writings of St. Bernadette of Lourdes.
Available at all of our Catholic bookstores, but also at IgnatiusPress.com.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for your interest in the book.
Absolutely.
Oh, are you kidding? This is wonderful.
I'm so pleased to hear that. Bernadette would be so happy, I think.
Oh, thank
Patricia,
you.
Thanks, and God bless.
God bless you, too. Thank you so much, Chris and Bruce.